Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up, 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We're live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
Oh, technical stuff that nobody needs to know about.
You're installing update 2 of 14 right now on your... Yeah, you're not going to have the ability to actually have a computer for like probably like 2 hours.
I have nothing but respect for Vince Murata, but I'm really sure that the last thing he did before he walked away from this station was, instead of logging off the computer, he shut down the computer. And by shutting down the computer, I am now installing update 2 of 14, which means I don't think I'm going to have a computer for a while.
Blame Benny.
Because here's the thing, and not that anybody cares about this at all, I don't even know where this computer actually is in this building. Somewhere in this building is the computer that I'll need to restart it. So I don't even know where it's at.
Switch seats? You could have mine.
Yeah,
it's in the best room in the building. When it's like 120 degrees out, I love going into the rack room because it's like 60 degrees.
Oh,
it's that
really?
Big glass build, that big glass room behind the web,
right
web,
there is
web
where
department.
It is. Okay, yeah.
I start sleeping there when it's 120 degrees outside.
free air conditioning, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway,
show gets over at 6, hang out for a few hours, go to bed, and right there in that room.
Nobody cares about my technical problems. What they care about instead is who's calling the shots with the Phoenix Suns. It's our top story of the day on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
Suns name James Jones general manager. Phoenix adds Jeff Bauer as senior VP of basketball operations and retains Trevor Buckstein as assistant general manager. That is verbatim from the release that was sent out about 9:30 this morning. The line that I tweeted out this morning when the release came out, I know a lot of people are focusing, maybe hyper-focusing on, quote, James will oversee all basketball operations for the team with Bauer and Buckstein reporting to him. Close
James
quote.
Never felt like in all the conversations we had for him, like it wasn't going to go his way. Like it wasn't like he was worried about his job. We'll see. We'll get to the end of the season. I mean, they knew they like the two guys they have, the Suns organization and the owner, Robert Sarver, likes Trevor Buckstein and what he does as an assistant GM, his drafting, how organized he is, the analytics department that. And they like James Jones for what he brings to the table. And there's a quote here. It says, James has demonstrated a remarkable ability to manage the day-to-day efforts of our front office while developing strong relationships with our players, coaches, and those across our organization and league. Furthermore, he is instilling the same championship culture and standard that he experienced on multiple occasions as a player. I have the utmost confidence in James as the leader of our basketball operations moving forward. We are aligned in the ultimate goal of one day bringing an NBA championship to Phoenix. That's the quote today with the front office. I don't even want to say restructuring. I mean, James is still the GM, Trevor's the assistant, and they've added Jeff Bauer to be a guy who could come in and assist and lend a helping hand and be a voice and has experience and things like that. Now, something Vinny said to me, while I was driving, it made a lot of sense to me. A lot of Suns fans, look, you're just conditioned for them to make the wrong move, and I get it. I totally get it. We all are. We're conditioned for the Phoenix Suns making the wrong move. They like James Jones. People in the league like James Jones. Players I talk to, NBA executives I talk to, respect James Jones, like James Jones. This isn't coming from the Suns. I speak with many NBA executives and coaches and players on a regular basis, and you know how many there are. They all highly regard James Jones. I mean, there's a high regard for James Jones as a GM, as a guy. Now, listen, does everybody think that he's inexperienced? Yes, but I don't think that they would want to get rid of the guy in the organization. So we're conditioned to think that a lot of the moves are wrong, and that's what Vinny said. This might be the right move. We just don't know. Let's see. People probably wanted to see somebody come in and have more power and more authority, more say, but this organization did not want to lose James Jones because they feel like he's headed in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really thought-provoking comment. I heard the exact same thing when Vinny said it in the noontime hour of the show, that yes, is given the lack of success, the track record of this organization, we are just conditioned to believe that every decision Robert Sarver ultimately makes is going to be the wrong one because there have been so many wrong ones. And in the interest of fairness, and we do try to be as fair as possible on this show, in the interest of fairness, it must be said that you got to give this thing a shot and see how it works, because it's possible that in hiring an experienced guy like Jeff Bauer is going to change the dynamic of the room, that hiring a guy who has had experience in basketball front offices, running basketball front offices, is going to make a difference. But it's hard not to fall into that trap of thinking that this hire is ultimately at its core no different than hiring Earl Watson a couple of years ago. He had no real experience being a head coach in this league. It was they didn't interview anybody else. They didn't explore any other avenues. They took the safe, easy way out, and they hired the in-house candidate without even looking at anybody else. And in some ways, hiring James Jones and making him the sole decision maker with the other guys in more assistant type roles is more period of period the period same period.
They took
when it comes to this organization.
They took the safe, easy way out.
Yes, they did. And don't play the song.
There is no easy way
there
out.
There is, though. No, you know what? That's where you're wrong. That's where you're wrong,
there
my
friend.
There
is no easy way out.
With the Phoenix Suns, this was the easy way out. Don't you think? Don't you think hiring James Jones was the easy way out? The hard way out.
There is no easy way out.
No, this song.
Locking told us.
This song does not apply to the situation.
There's no shortcut home.
I love this song.
There is no easy way out.
So what are we going to get now? A montage of Robert Sarver sitting around the office, rubbing his chin. What should I do? Are we going to see flashbacks of Jeff Hornacek and Ryan McDonough,
Lindsey Hunter,
Lance Blanks,
Earl Watson?
Flashback to Lon Pabby,
Alvin Gentry.
Are we going to have a video montage
Eric
of every
Bledsoe
mistake
and
Robert
Sarver
has every made as he's driving around his Maserati through the streets of Phoenix, angry at everything that has happened to the Suns?
The door being slammed by Robin Lopez.
Are we going to get that montage to the song that defined Rocky IV? Turn it up for me. Go on.
Picture it. Robert Sarver in his car driving around, and the image is flashing. Robin Lopez slamming the door. Bledsoe's tweeting. Markieff Morris. The three-point guard situation.
Jerry Colangelo was standing at the top of the stairs yelling, "You can't win."
Four goats in Ryan McDonough's office. Jerry shouting, "You can't win."
Oh, my God. What a montage that would be.
My God, we should pay somebody
what,
to do that.
Seriously, what a montage just, that would be. In the same mold of Rocky IV, right?
Yes.
Every single mistake that has gone down during the Robert Sarver era as a montage to this song, just like they did in Rocky IV, that would be brilliant.
Just keep showing the standings, 2010.
Brilliant.
11, 12.
Jerry Colangelo at the top of the stairs. You can't win! Give me one more. There's no easy way out. There's no shortcut. All right, so that was fun. That was a lot of fun, actually. My chest kind of hurts from laughing. But here's the thing.
You listen, you can't go there. You can, like, once you go there, I know. I'm going to hit it.
Once I say those words.
I can't resist.
But this was the easy way out for the Phoenix Suns. Because the hard way is to hire David Griffin. The hard way is to hire a guy and say, it's yours. I know what my reputation is. Mm-hmm. I know what my problem has been, says Robert Sarver to this guy, and I'm going to change my ways. Here you go, Dave. It's all yours.
Let's go
do it.
Okay.
That's the hard way.
Right.
This is the easy way out for the Suns. This is the way they have done it for years and years and years and years. And that's what bugs Suns fans the most, I think.
Here's the thing, and again, we don't know, and you got to give it a chance. Because listen, we have opinions. Everybody has opinions. When Herm Edwards got hired by ASU, my opinion was that this is a joke of a hire.
Sure.
And he ended up doing a really good job,
yes,
okay?
He did.
Which is fine. I mean, he ended up doing a really good job, and I'm happy that he did a good job. James Jones might end up being a really good general manager. And the only thing we have to go by on what he did on an interim basis, he made a good trade to get Kelly Oubre here. I don't care how they got to that point. I don't care. They were getting rid of Trevor Ariza and trying to make a trade. He ended up with Kelly Oubre. That was a really good trade. Tyler Johnson was not a bad trade at all. It wasn't a bad trade. You got a guy that can handle the point guard situation for a little bit. He's got 1 year left on his contract. It's an expiring contract that you now can use to go get yourself another player. He set himself up. I mean, you're playing chess here. By getting Tyler Johnson, you're setting something up. You're setting up a future move because now I've got an expiring contract I can use. The moves he made were not bad. He made good moves. He didn't do anything stupid. I've said this all year long.
Yes, you've said that.
He resisted the temptation to do stupid things. And there were a lot of stupid trades that he could have made. He didn't make any of those. So all we have to go on is what he did as the interim GM. And it's not about wins and losses because this team was never going to win a lot of basketball games this year. But he did a decent job. But now he's got to go into the offseason. They've got to get a point guard. They've got to get a power forward. They've got a high draft pick coming up. Let's see what he does, given the opportunity to build this team into a contending team over the next couple
years. I'll differ with you on one thing. Uh-huh. It does matter to me a little bit that they kind of lucked into Kelly Oubre. That was not the design. That was not the plan. Now, in the same way the Arizona Cardinals lucked into David Johnson, sometimes you need a little good luck.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
Sometimes you need a little fate and circumstance and things like that. But it's hard for me to give him full credit for Kelly Oubre, knowing that that was not the intention when they went into that weekend, was to come out of it with Kelly Oubre. That was not their goal. That was not their intention. That's not what they were trying to. And I do think that matters. I really do. I guess at the end of the day, this is the thought that I can't get out of my head. Why would the Suns expect any of their fans to be really all that excited about today's news? And I can't come up with one reason that would make Suns fans, other than, and I agree with what you and Vinny are saying, it's only fair to give it a chance, but you can see on the surface why it's so hard to give this a chance, right? I mean, we can
like
all
more of the
see
same.
That because it does feel like more of the same.
When they brought James Jones into the organization, there was, if you remember, everybody was, oh, this is a great move.
Yes.
This is a great move. Here's a guy that knows this is finally. They got somebody that can relate to the players, and he's not too far removed, and he's respected, and he's liked, and he's won. So when he got brought into this organization, I remember everybody thinking, okay, that's a good move.
Yeah.
That's a really good move. He's going to be able to help.
This week, we're qualifying you for Cards on the Clock. It's the ultimate draft flyaway experience in Nashville. You can still get in on it. Text the word CLOCK to 62620. Listen every day this week, 4:45 on our show today. We're going to name off another name. You can also listen at 7:45 and 12:45. You're going to have 9 minutes to call and claim your Cardinals draft hat and a qualifying spot for the grand prize trip to Nashville for the NFL draft. Again, text the word CLOCK to 62620. Brought to you by Cherish 100% all-natural cherry juice. Robbie Ray, great last night, but he and the Diamondbacks were let down by a problem that we kind of need to keep our eye on a little bit. And we'll do that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Still very early in the season, far too early to draw conclusions or say this is going to be like this or that's going to be like that. You just can't say those things after 12 games. But we continue to learn little things about the Arizona Diamondbacks kind of as we're going through this season. And last night, unfortunately, Robbie Ray didn't pitch deep into the game.
Had a no-hitter through five.
Pitched very, very well when he was out there. Very proficient with the strikeouts. 10 through five innings.
He was blowing people away.
Had a no-hitter going. Just had crazy good stuff. And then
the Shields let off
fell
the
apart.
Six with a single. There was a stolen base and an error on the throw. Now, at that point, he's at 91 pitches. Forsyth is up. And I asked Torey Lovullo about this after the game. He brought the infield in, not all the way in, but midway in. Brought the infield in, and Forsyth got an RBI single off the glove of Nick Ahmed. If Nick's back, he catches the ball, no problem. But what Torey did is he brought the infield in with a runner on third and nobody out trying to protect a one-run lead.
And here's what he said about that in response to your question after the game.
Yeah, I thought I was going to take a little bit of a risk right there. That's where you trust your pitchers and they're going to put the ball on the ground. I mean, but we were in a kind of a mid-range depth. We weren't necessarily in on the grass We try and get a little creative with our guys. But, yeah, the idea was to protect a 1-0 lead. Wasn't getting a very good feel for what we were doing offensively. I thought that Lynn was throwing the ball well. And I felt like, to me, the first 1-2 was going to win the game today. That was what my gut feel was in our dugout. So I was trying to preserve some runs right there. Yeah.
So here's me. I'm at the ballpark, and I'm watching this, and I'm saying it's the sixth inning. And Torrey's bringing the infield in. And I was shocked at that. I mean, give up the run and get the out. Don't give up the chance for a big inning, right? Give up the run. It's 1-1. You still got the bottom of the sixth, the bottom of the seventh. You got four more bats coming. Give up the run. Now, what happens is Forsythe gets on base. Now, luckily for them, Lopez came in. They gave up a ground rule double, but then they got out of it because Chafin came in, struck out Gallo, and got a double play from Cabrera. It could have been a disaster.
Could have been, yeah.
It could have been. A disaster was averted, but I didn't like that he brought the infield in with a 1-0 game in the sixth inning. I mean, I think that's something you do in the eighth inning or the ninth inning. But so I thought the Torrey got away with one there, bringing the infield in. In the end, the bullpen just wasn't good enough. Archie gave up an inherited run. Then Archie gave up a home run. Andrees didn't pitch well. And, you know, what was a 1-1 baseball game ends up being, they end up getting down 5-1 in the game.
There were lots of little, and that's kind of the bigger overarching point about all of this right now. The state of the Diamondbacks right now, today, 12 games in. All right. You mentioned Archie and his performance last night. You mentioned Andrees and his performance. Yes, Chafin got out of that bases loaded jam and deserves major credit for that. He also walked the leadoff guy in the seventh, which is something that Chafin does from time to time, right? He puts that first guy he faces. Wasn't the first guy in the game, but it was relative to the inning. He puts that guy on. Yoan Lopez didn't record an out. Threw seven pitches.
Ground rule double.
Put two guys on, right?
And then walked Pence.
So here's the number today that, again, it's early, but you have to keep this in mind. Bullpen ERA right now.
Okay.
Third worst in baseball.
Oof.
Second worst in the National League.
Yeah.
Third worst in all of baseball right now. Really early. Really, 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 really early. But their bullpen ERA is over 7 right now. Now, you know, Hirano's had his struggles. Chafin's had his struggles. Archie, I believe that was the first run he had allowed all year last night.
Okay, I think a lot of that. Okay, I got to ask you because I don't know the answer to this. Does that include the 7 runs that John Ryan Murphy gave
up?
I
would assume that it does.
Okay.
Yes, it would have to.
I just don't know the answer to that.
I believe it does.
John Ryan Murphy gave up 7 runs. 7 runs.
He was pitching in relief, so it would count as that. So,
okay.
So to your point, I know, and yes, that not only is that fair, how many of those runs does Matt Cook, is he responsible
if
for
you take
by
out,
himself?
If you take out Matt Cook and you take out John Ryan Murphy, I mean, you're literally taking out 22 runs that they have given up. I mean, that's a...
Makes a big difference.
Yeah. Matt Cook and John Ryan Murphy have given up 22 runs. Yep. Now, there are guys that are struggling in the bullpen. I mean, you know, Hirano's got an ERA of 8. Chapin's at 6.23. Andrees is at 5.4. I get what you're saying. Archie's at 1.5. Lopez is at a 0. Holland's at a 0. Duplantier was at a 0. So I do think that it's there's two ways to look at
mm-hmm.
it. And it's the one, I got two guys that have killed the ERA in the bullpen, and that's John Ryan Murphy and it's Matt Cook. I've got some guys that are pitching really well. I got some guys that aren't pitching well. But overall, the reason that those numbers are so bad are because of these two guys.
No, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because to just look at a number and make a judgment off of a number would be wrong.
Right.
And I'm glad you point, because I to be honest with you, I'd forgotten all about John Ryan Murphy.
Oh my God, he got 7
but
runs.
I forgot that those numbers are going to be factored into that. But
yes.
Sometimes when you go beyond the numbers, and I'm going to pick on Andrew Chafin here just a little bit. Okay.
Yep.
And he did this a lot last year. I'd have to go back and look. You know, I don't want to just say a lot and not have a number behind it, but I remember him doing this a lot. His ERA number was very good last year, which would lead you to believe he had a very good year.
But he didn't do good with inherited runners.
But if you watch those games, man, sometimes he would come in and not record any outs and put a guy on, right? Sometime that guy would hurt them, sometime it wouldn't. It just depended on the situation. But if you're watching these games night, if you were to watch last night's game, hey, Chafin deserves a big attaboy for getting out of that bases loaded jam. But that leadoff run, that leadoff walk that he gave up in the seventh, ultimately turned out to be the go-ahead run, if I'm not mistaken, in that game.
It was a game of two-run lead. Now, Archie came in and gave it. Now, here's the thing. I mean, I know you said, Chapin comes in, bases loaded, nobody out, strikes out Gallo and gets a double play out of Cabrera, and he gets out of an inning, which could have been a disaster because Torrey brought the infield in when he shouldn't have. Seventh inning, he walks the leadoff guy. Then they have a sack bunt. He gets a fly out. So there's two outs, runner and a runner on second. Archie comes in and gets that out, and then you're like, okay. I mean, because then you're talking Chapin-faced. Gallo struck him out. Cabrera double play. Gave up one walk. Then he got a guy on a sack bunt, got a guy on a fly out. Five batters he faced, one got on base. One. I mean, it doesn't seem bad, but that runner ends up scoring the run and ends up being the go-ahead run in a game. I get you.
Yeah, it all depends on how you want to look at it, but you're right.
But wouldn't you fault Archie more? Archie comes into the game with two outs, and all he's got to do is get one out right there. High leverage situation, throws a change up. The Shields belts it for an RBI single, and then the runner that Chapin put on board score.
My expectation is that Archie Bradley, if he is truly one of the best relievers in baseball, that's a situation where I expect him to get the third out of the inning. Yes.
And then
that would be that moment.
And
yeah.
I went up upset with Chapin's outing at all.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's just nuanced and how you want to look at it. But at moments, the bullpen hasn't been great this year. It has. I mean, I think we can say that with confidence, right? Generally, overall,
Hirano,
especially last night, the bullpen has not been great so far this year.
Yeah, Hirano hasn't been good. I mean, Cook hasn't been good. Yeah, absolutely.
His game is being dissected and picked apart by analysts and experts alike. So with Josh Rosen at the center of so much speculation, it boils down to a simple question at this point. Do the Cardinals owe him an explanation? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Spencer Keatsman is in for Sarah Cazell today. Always good to see Spence in.
Thank you.
Try to get your attention off the Masters for just a second so you can get us the Twitter poll question of the day. I know it's tough, Spence.
It is. With the news being official, James Jones will remain the Suns' general manager. How confident are you in this organization moving in the right direction? 7% say very confident. That's actually higher than I thought it was going to be. 23% say fairly confident. 40% say that they have their doubts. And 30% say it's a total disaster.
So 30% either like it or are kind of in wait-and-see mode.
Right.
40% have their doubts. Another 30% think it's a total disaster.
And 7% like it?
7% I really like it.
Yeah,
but there's another 23% who kind of like it. Kind of wait and see. That's sounds about right. Like Vinny Murata said, great wisdom spews from Vince Murata. And like he said earlier, we are conditioned to believe that it's going to be bad. And that's fair. It's fair to feel that way about it.
Got to turn the corner at some point.
I would think so. You
bring back Oubre, Booker, go get John Morant or Zion, hopefully in the draft. Go add some players in free agency and let's roll.
We'll see. I got this little bit of news for you here. I'm sorry, I'm going to do this to you again today. I don't mean to do this to you.
Tiger Woods playing well at the Masters?
No, not at all. From the Twitter account of Ian Rappaport.
Yes.
Tweeted this out 7 minutes ago. The New York Giants are doing quarterback homework for their sixth pick. They're hosting Kyler Murray at their facility today.
Okay. Kyler Murray just sent out on Instagram the front building of the New York Giants facility.
Oh, really? Oh, so he's there and ready to go. Now, look, is it smart? We talked yesterday about the Washington Redskins hosting Kyler Murray. Is it smart for every team that needs a quarterback in the draft to do their due diligence on every quarterback possible? Of course it is. It makes all the sense in the world. If not for now, maybe 4 years from now, you'll be in a position to sign Kyler Murray, and you want to go back and look at your notes if you're the New York Giants.
Absolutely.
And yet, it is almost impossible for at least me, I don't know how you feel about this, to look at news like that and wonder, just wonder, are the Giants plotting something? Are the Giants planning something? Are they going to try to get somewhere where they can go get Kyler Murray? And if so, was that explained to Murray so that they could get that visit? I mean, was it explained to Murray for Washington?
Yesterday, we talked about the possibility that Washington could leapfrog the Giants and trade with the Jets at 3.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story out there today about the Jets possibly trading with 3. I will give you credit. You've been on this whole The draft could turn at three because you've been believing that the Jets, for months now, you've been believing that the Jets will move out of the three spot because somebody's going to want to come up there and get a quarterback. Now, if the Giants are hosting Murray and they really like him, you know, I don't know. It might be the Giants that move up. See what the Giants' advantage is this. Washington could come calling. Denver could come calling. Anybody could come calling and saying, we want to move up to number three to get ahead of the Giants. The Giants could say, that's fine and dandy, but we're the only team that can trade with you that could give you a better first-round pick than them. We have a better first-round pick.
Yep.
Right? We have
more. We have 17. We have 6. We have 17.
We have 6. We have 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the Raiders also have 3 picks in the first round. So the Raiders could be, you know, a team that, but you with the Raiders, it would be moving up from
4 to 3.
But again,
so
they would have to just, but the only reason you're the Raiders to move up one spot is so that nobody else does. I'm only moving up one spot because I don't want somebody else to move up one spot.
I said this yesterday, and I'll say it again today. You only make those moves if you're the Giants or if you're the Redskins, if you are absolutely convinced that the Cardinals are not going to take Kyler Murray number one. Otherwise, what's the point, right?
Yeah, but right now you don't know.
Like,
you know,
but you can't give up all that inventory to move up to three without knowing for sure.
Oh, yeah, you have
that
to wait.
Kyler Murray's going
to
be there.
Yeah, you have to wait till the Giants make their pick.
You have to wait.
You have to wait. Right?
Maybe it's just Washington doing their due diligence in case the Cardinals don't take them. The Giants doing their due diligence just in case the Cardinals don't take them.
Let me tell you why.
Go Nick Bosa, but it still seems to me that if you really love Kyler Murray, the ultimate destination is numero uno. Not Trace.
Last year, there were 4 quarterbacks that everybody kind of liked, right? And they were all like in the same. So Buffalo moved up twice. They didn't know who they were going to get. They moved up twice. I want to get one of these guys.
Yeah.
I just want to get one of them. So this year, it's not like that. The difference between Haskins and Murray is through the roof from what I hear.
Oh, Haskins is slipping.
Right. Sounds He's not like. Even going to show up at the NFL draft from what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a big difference between Murray and Haskins. So it's not like you're just going to move up so you can get one of the quarterbacks. If you're moving up, it's going to be to get Murray.
Something to keep an eye on. A 3-part series with Doug and Wolf. And this is super cool what our morning show is doing. A big, extensive conversation at the same time with Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer. And they're both going to be talking about the pressures of being a franchise quarterback, the Cardinals, the number one pick, how the Cardinals have had handled Josh Rosen and things like that. It's a 3-part interview that they're rolling out on the Doug and Wolf show. Part one airs tomorrow at 7:30 in the morning, focusing on Josh Rosen and his uncertain future with the team. Part two is then on Tuesday at 7:30. Part three is on Wednesday at 7:30. And then eventually you'll be able to hear it all in one interview and in a podcast form. It's called Cardinals QB1, the franchise focus. And in the little sound that have been released to us so far, a very interesting kind of point counterpoint on this one. Kurt Warner was asked by the guys if he thinks the Cardinals owe Josh Rosen an explanation for everything that's gone on in the last 2 months.
But in order to get the best out of Josh Rosen, should he get an explanation?
Well, I mean, I'm a believer that he deserves an explanation. You know, that you can say what you want. He's an employee that you've put in this position. I believe everybody deserves the right to be sat down and say, this is what's going on here. And be honest.
Carson Palmer had kind of a different look at it.
With Kurt and I's, you know, previous relationship with Michael Bidwell, my relationship with Steve Keim, and knowing that the individuals that we know that they are, they haven't just left him in the dark and not texted him or not talked to him. Now, I don't think they need to tell him all of the truth. Because they're in a point where if they knew what they were going to do, they would have already done it.
Do they need to keep him in the loop or not?
No.
Do they owe him an explanation?
No.
So you're Team Palmer on this one?
I'm Team Palmer. I think Kurt's wrong.
Kurt Warner's going to text you in 3, 2, and 1.
Don't need an explanation. What do you need an explanation for? You're an employee. You got paid $10 million. Show up and do your job. They'll tell you when you're going to get moved. They'll tell you. You know what? Here's what's fair. That you don't find out via Twitter or social media or your friend. Say, hey, I just saw on the screen on TV that you just got traded, dude. And really? I mean, you owe him the courtesy of letting him know when you've made that decision and you're going to trade him. Now, I wouldn't even tell Josh Rosen that I'm trading him like 3 days before the draft, because I don't want him telling his agent and his word gets out and, you know, you might screw up my draft. I can't have him know.
Yeah.
But when I'm going to do it, I'll call him right before I make the trade and let him know we're going to move you.
Carson Palmer on what that hypothetical conversation might sound like with Josh Rosen.
It's the kind of conversation that can be really easy. You know, like, look, we're not 100% sure what we're going to do. We may end up trading you. If somebody offers us a deal that we can't refuse, that may happen. If it's not a good enough deal because we value you at such a great level and we have so much respect for you, then we're not going to make it happen. But they don't need to disclose everything. I don't think that they owe that to him.
Can't disclose everything. You think Rosen's going to – you think if they went to Rosen right now and said, hey, we're going to trade you. We're looking at five different options. Could be Washington. Could be the Giants. Could be Denver. We're going to trade you. We've made up our mind. We're going to trade. You don't think over the next 2 weeks Rosen's going to tell people? You don't think he's going to let people?
I would assume.
You don't think he's
going to
let his best friend know? You don't think he's going to let his family know? You don't think he's going to let his agent know? All of a sudden, word starts spreading. Okay, Rosen's being traded. Okay, and now, like, you don't want that out. You don't want that out if you're the Cardinals.
I would assume that would get out, but I would assume that's going to get out anyway.
Okay, but say you're negotiating with a couple of different teams.
Oh, sure, then you don't want kill value. You want to still be able to maintain that mystery and that leverage.
So that's why it's wrong to be like, I owe him an explanation. Well, what if you're trading him? Do you owe him an explanation if you're trading him or if you're keeping him? You don't owe him anything. When the time comes to make a decision, you let them know.
Yeah. The last few days have put a little bit of a scare in ASU fans, and rightfully so. But it would appear, early on at least, that perhaps ASU basketball has dodged a bullet. We'll give you the very latest on that situation next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Perhaps, crisis averted. For ASU, if there ever was a crisis, if that's even the word you want to use. There is a report in the New York Post that the St. John's basketball program is now focusing their search on the Iona head coach.
Tim Clewis. He was contacted directly by St. John's. And it could be him. Now, they're saying in the New York Post that it's a two-person race. It's down to two. Tim Clouse and Bobby Hurley. It has got a picture of both guys on there, and it says, you know, Bobby would probably have to get paid a lot of money. It says Bobby Hurley has been viewed as athletic director Mike Cragg's top choice, but there was doubts he would leave the Pac-12 school, and St. John's was still monitoring his situation. Hurley earned a reported $2.4 million last year, had a hefty buyout, and is under contract through 2023. A source close to Hurley said that he likes living out west and would need to be blown away to leave the Pac-12 school for a rebuilding job at St. John's, though coming back home did interest him.
Yeah, I'm looking at a tweet here from Sammy Albano, former editor for CBS News, former executive producer of Inside the Big East. He doesn't have a verified Twitter account, but he just tweeted out, and it was retweeted by devilsdigest.com about 45 minutes ago. Sammy tweeted out, so the worst kept secret turns out to be Tim Clewis will be the next head coach of St. John's basketball. I think this will be a tremendous hire to reunite a disgruntled fan base and get a St. John's back on a winning track. Back the hire, guy with St. John's roots, all that stuff.
He played at St. John's.
Yeah,
he played there.
Far from official word, and I wouldn't know Sammy Albano if he walked in here right now, but it was retweeted by Devil's Digest, and I do trust those guys over there, so perhaps it's a little closer to being finalized. And I think the encouraging news out of all of that, and maybe this will come into play in future moments like this, if Bobby really likes living here that much, that's a great thing for him and ASU. It doesn't mean that when a job comes along that's a lot better than St. John's and they want Bobby Hurley, it doesn't mean that he won't jump for it.
No, but lateral jobs, he might stay, especially with a sophomore in high school for a couple of years. Now, Clewis led Iona to six NCAA tournaments in the last 9 years. He's worked his way up the coaching ranks, high school level, junior college, Division II, Iona, played for St. John's from 79 to 81. So, he makes sense to to go take over that program. He's got ties. Now he's done. I mean, Chris Mullin was a legend at St. John's, still is a legend, and he couldn't really get that program turned around. But it does look like it's down to a two-man race, and that because of Bobby liking it out west, because of the $3 million buyout, the salary, they could easily just go get the Iona coach.
Yeah.
And not have to pay him as much, and not have to pay a $3 million buyout and go get him to coach the program.
Look, here's the truth. And it's pretty simple. It's going to happen one of these days. I don't know when. A year, two, three, five. If Bobby Hurley continues to do what he's done over there, look at the attendance numbers and how they've increased. Look at the recruiting and how much better it is. Look at the fact that they got into tournaments in back-to-back years for the first time since the Carter administration, since the early days of the Reagan administration. All right? If he keeps, he is steadily, maybe slowly, but steadily, improve the program year by year since he's been here.
Yes.
This year it was their first tournament win since 2009. Next year it might be something even better than that. If he keeps doing that, eventually the day will come when somebody will offer him a job that he won't say no to, that he'll look at and go, yep, that's where I want to go plant my flag. That's where I want to go be for a while. That day's going to come. You've been wishing for that day to come, for either a football or a basketball coach to be able to be good enough here to get a job somewhere else, to be promoted within his own industry.
I've been here since 97. I've never seen a coach at ASU wanted by another program and swept away because he did such a great job at ASU as a football or basketball coach. I've never seen it. Yes, I long for that day. You know, I don't want Bobby Hurley to leave, but I'm telling you, when that does happen, if he's taken ASU to four straight NCAA tournaments and then he leaves, we could sit there and say, okay, thank you. You got this thing turned around. You did a good job. Instead of a guy getting fired because you don't go to NCAA tournaments, or you're a middle of the rung program, or a bottom third program in the conference. Like, that's not what you want out of your coach. You want success.
Yep.
But with success comes this.
Yes.
This is the problem with success. You're going to get some feelers out there. There's going to be some programs. Hey, how many schools will fire their coach this year in football and basketball? A lot. And they're going to look and they're going to say, now, I think Herm Edwards, because of his age, is in a little bit different category. Herm is going to be like, I'm going to get this going for a few years, then I'm going to probably turn it over to my defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the defensive coordinator, if Danny does a really good job, then maybe he's a hot candidate somewhere else. Herm's in a different boat. But Bobby, having success, okay. Now you get a program like St. John's, they're going to fire their coach. You know what? Bobby Hurley's done a good job at ASU. He's been to two NCAA tournaments in a row. They're packing the house over. Okay, let's reach out to him. So that's what you get with success. You're going to get interest from other programs.
Yep, and you're going to have to be prepared for that one of these days if you're an ASU fan. I'll be curious to see, and I have no idea what to predict on this one way or another, but we talked about this briefly yesterday. I will be curious to see if financially the university has done anything or will do anything to even slightly sweeten the financial pot for Bobby Hurley, because that is also hand in hand what goes down with this.
So funny you said that, because I literally just asked.
Did you?
Literally like 5 minutes ago.
Yep.
When we started this conversation, I just asked.
Because that
any chance that Bobby gets a bump in pay?
Just a little bump. Just a little something.
Yeah,
little,
you know,
a little
what?
Bit of sugar.
Gonna,
a little
gonna,
bit of, hey,
we're
going to
add
$600,000
onto your contract over the next 3 years.
Yep. Or a bonus for an extra win threshold. Just something, anything.
Right.
Because that is, unfortunately, a staple of this business, of this coaching business, is that when some big dog comes knocking on Bobby Hurley's door, it is usually customary for his employer, if they want to keep him, give him a little more scratch. Just a little.
Right.
Not a lot. Not a huge raise. Not like a break the budget kind of raise. But
give him a lollipop.
Hey, give him a lollipop. Give him a medal. scratch his back a little bit, you know? Hey, Bobby, here's
a back scratcher.
Here's a little extra something for you. I'll be curious to see if that comes down. I bet it does. I bet it does.
Yeah, I mean, why not? So what?
Yep. Oh, I don't care. Okay. I don't care if it does or if it doesn't. It's not my money. But that is so a part of the business. And ASU has usually been in a position to avoid those things. Not real eager to get into bidding wars for coaches or to spend quote-unquote market value for coaches. But I think with Bobby, it's a little different. They made a real concerted effort to make sure they were getting market value for him a couple years ago.
I'm not going to lie. This is enjoyable. Bobby Hurley was sought out by another university. Now, ties to the AD, whatever it was. I mean, there's a university that has had success in the past that's looking for a new coach, and they have some interest in Bobby Hurley. However you tie the interest together, they had interest in Bobby Hurley. Like, that's a good thing. It does, in a roundabout way, it means that ASU's having success. Yep. Enough so where another program looks at what Bobby's done at ASU for a few years and says, you know what, he would be good here.
Now that the regular season has come to an end, there are some eyebrow-raising moves being made around the NBA, and some of them, perhaps, could impact the Phoenix Suns. We'll tell you how next on the Burns and Gambo Show.